our own ships from the outside. Yes, until you get close. My guess is it altered its shape to mimic us, some kind of protective camouflage. Which worked, didn't it? Titus, my father, he always thought there was another flotilla ship trailing us. That was disturbing, but it could be explained by some event which had happened in the past. If he'd known there was an alien ship following us, it would have changed everything. What could he have done about it? I don't know. Alert the other ships, perhaps? He would have assumed it meant us harm. Maybe he was right. I don't know. It's been out here an awfully long time. It hasn't done much in all those years. Something happened then, a noise that they felt rather than heard, like the sonorous clang of a very large bell. They were floating through vacuum, so the reverberation must have been transmitted through the hull. Gomez, what the hell was that? His voice came through weakly. I don't know. Nothing happened here. But you're suddenly a lot fainter. After we had been descending for nearly 2 hours, I saw something below, far down the vertical pipeline. It was a faint golden glow, but it was coming closer. I thought about the episode I had just had. I could still taste Skye's fear as he entered the caluche, hard and metallic like the taste of a bullet. It seemed very much like the fear I was feeling myself. We were both descending into darkness, both of us seeking answers, or rewards, but also knowing that we were placing ourselves in great danger, with very little idea of what lay ahead. The way the episode resonated with my present experience was chilling. Skye had gone beyond simply infecting my mind with images. Now he seemed to be steering me, shaping my actions to commemorate his own ancient deeds. Like a puppeteer whose string stretched across 3 centuries of history, I clenched my fist, expecting that the episode would have caused blood to gush from my hand. But my palm was perfectly dry. The inspection robot continued its clunking descent. Nothing that Quirrenbach had done lately had made the machine move any faster. It was unbearably hot now, and I reckoned none of us would have survived more than 3 or 4 hours before dying of heat exhaustion. But it was getting lighter. I soon saw why. Below us, but coming closer now, was a section of pipeline walled in filthy glass. Quirrenbach made the machine rotate so that none of us were easily visible by the time the robot began to descend through the transparent section. I still had a good view of the dark chamber we were moving through, a cavernous room infested with looming curved machinery, huge stove-like pressure vessels connected by networks of shiny intestinal tubing and festooned with slender catwalks. Rows of mighty turbines stretched away across the floor like sleeping dinosaurs. We had reached the cracking station. I looked around, wondering at the silent vastness. "There doesn't seem to be anyone on duty," Zebra said. "Is this normal?" I asked. "Yes," Quirrenbach said. "This part of the operation more or less runs itself. But I'd hated to have picked the one day when there was someone on duty who noticed the 3 of us coming down." Many dozens of pipes, much like the one I was descending, reached to the ceiling, a wide circular sheet of glass spoked by dark metal supports and then rammed through it. Beyond it was only a stained, soot-grey fog, for the cracking station lay deep in the chasm and was usually covered by the mist. Only when the fog parted momentarily, cleaved open by the chaotic thermals which spiraled up the chasm's side, could I see the immense sheer walls of planetary rock rising above. Far, far above was the antenna-like extension of the stalk, where Sibylline had taken